All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is David Jesperson, and I am a new assistant professor at the University of Georgia, and I'm going to be talking about validating some molecular markers used for abiotic stress tolerance. And this project was actually a collaborative project between the University of Georgia and Rutgers, and I actually did this work while I was doing my graduate studies at Rutgers. So as you all know, creeping bentgrass, Gras-distalinifera, is widely used on high-value turf areas. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the best abiotic stress tolerance. And so during periods of heat or drought, we frequently see damages to turf areas such as premature senescence, wilting, thinning of the canopy, and eventual death of plant areas. And so these kind of whole plant responses are caused by a number of damages on the cellular levels. So these include things like the breakdowns of pigments and proteins, membrane damage, changes in carbon relations, so a decrease in photosynthesis and increase in respiration, and production of reactive oxygen species. So there's kind of a lot of facets that go into abiotic stress damages, and it's because of this complex nature that abiotic tolerance, stress tolerance, is this kind of complex multigenic trait that is difficult to improve and breed for. And so one of the best ways to deal with abiotic stress tolerance is, of course, having tolerant genotypes. And one way to try and overcome that complexity of abiotic stresses is potentially through using marker-assisted selection. So this is trying to associate traits of value to specific genetic regions or markers, and then being able to use these to improve selection speed and efficiency for the eventual development of improved cultivars. So the specific objectives of this were to screen a diverse collection of germplasm in multiple years and environments for both heat and drought tolerance, and then score these germplasm with markers previously associated with the abiotic stresses of heat or drought, and these included QTL or candidate gene markers. And then once we have that information, to hopefully be able to validate the association between some of these molecular markers and these important related abiotic stress tolerance traits. So the focus of this talk is not going to be about the development of these markers, but it would be remiss if I didn't at least kind of mention them briefly before we get into the validation of them. So as you all know, QTL analysis is trying to associate a specific region of genetic region with a trait of interest, and these were done in a previously developed mapping population that was originally developed for dollar spot resistance, but was also shown to have differences in abiotic stress tolerance. This map contained 445 markers, two of which were SSR markers, and so these were screened in multiple environments and years for both heat and drought tolerance. And from that, a total of 32 potential QTL regions were identified for various traits related to drought tolerance across two parental linkage maps, and 19 potential QTL regions were identified related to heat tolerance traits. And so then SSR markers that were linked to these regions found through this QTL analysis, those are the markers that are going to be moved forward in this validation study for potential future use in marker-assisted selection. Now moving on to those candidate gene markers that I mentioned. So candidate genes are basically genes that are believed to play important roles in your mechanism of interest. So in this case, again, we're looking at those abiotic stress tolerance. And these were identified from a number of previous studies, so things like proteomics. So if you see a change in a specific protein in response to stress between a tolerant and sensitive line, maybe that's a protein that you then want to look at the underlying gene. Similarly, looking at metabolomics and different enzyme and gene transcription assays, where we find, you know, here are some potential pathways and specific genes that may be related to our differences in tolerance, and then trying to develop markers for those. So we screened a number of potential candidate genes. In this study, we successfully found polymorphism in five of these candidate genes, and they included three heat shock proteins, so 26, 70, and 90. Heat shock proteins are chaperone proteins that are involved in the refolding and folding of damaged proteins, which is a big part, again, as proteins become damaged during abiotic stresses. chlorophyll AB binding protein, which helps bind pigments to the light harvesting complex and is, of course, associated with photosynthesis, and phenylalanine ammonialase, which is involved in the phenylpropanoid biosynthesis pathway. And this is involved in the development of polyphenols, which have been previously associated with abiotic stresses and have protective effects and antioxidant roles in the plant. So when we screened these candidate gene markers, again, originally screened in those QTL mapping populations, here's just an example of some of the results where we can see that there's a significant association with some of these traits when we use Kruskal-Wallis analysis to see, you know, individuals that do and don't have these markers, if they're significantly different. So we did find that these markers had some utility in this population. So now we've got a kind of set of a handful of candidate gene markers and some of these SSR markers from the QTL analysis. And so we want to validate these and see if they actually have potential use going forward. So for that study, it was a population of 127 individuals. The majority of them, 122, was a diverse collection that came out of the Rutgers breeding program. And then there was also five commercial cultivars included in their standards. And traits that were screened were similar to the traits that were previously screened and frequently seen in these kind of abiotic stress studies. So your overall visual turf quality rating, membrane stability is measured through electrolyte leakage, chlorophyll content, NDVI, and relative water content was also measured during drought stress periods. Going on to the more specific environmental screening, so they were screened both at Rutgers University in New Jersey, as well as down in Georgia at the Griffin campus of the University of Georgia, and they were screened across 2 years in 2014 and 2015. So for heat screening, we screened them during the summer months of July and August, when presumably that's when you have the highest temperatures and those are causing the greatest stresses on the plants. And both these fields were equipped with rainout shelters for the drought stress screening. So either in the fall or spring, we turn off the irrigation and activate the rainout shelters and put these plots through a period of drought stress to do the drought screening and then let them recover and, you know, do this again at a different point. So I don't have time to talk about all the data, so I'm just going to show a couple distributions of the population, and these are just for your visual turf quality ratings on that 1 to 9 scale. Rutgers is on the left side of the screen, and Georgia's on the right side of the screen, with a 2014 on the top and 2015 on the bottom. So this is heat stress, and the only other thing to notice is that triangle, is just a standard Pencross, so you have an idea of where that old and true standard falls within these population distributions. And as you kind of expect to see with most population distributions, you kind of have this normal shape where the bulk of them are somewhere in the middle, but there are a few individuals that perform highly and a few that perform not so great, kind of falling towards the bottom of those. And again, so here's the same layout with Rutgers on the left, UGA on the right, 2014 top, 2015 on the bottom, and this is just distributions for drought stress. And again, we see these similar trends where we have these distributions, and the one thing that's kind of interesting to note is that there are certain individuals in this diverse collection of plants that had consistently very high performance. So regardless of if it was in New Jersey or in Georgia or heat and drought, there are certain individuals that you almost always found in the top 5 or 10%. So, you know, from a physiology standpoint, that's interesting to maybe look at those a little bit more in the future. Here's just a couple images. This is drought stress in the two locations for 2014 and 15, or just 2015 for the two locations. And you can kind of get an idea that corresponds to those distributions, where we see there's some plots that are still relatively green and going along okay, and others have, you know, extreme amounts of wilting and leaf firing and are not doing so great. So on to the actual marker confirmation methods. So a total of 70 markers were screened, including the five candidate gene markers and 29 SSR markers from the previous QTL study. And then the remaining markers were SSR markers spread across the different linkage groups to assess population structure. That population structure was analyzed using structure version 3.2, and marker association was done using the GLM methods in TASL version 2.1. And then also markers that were found to have significant associations were further confirmed using Kruskal-Wallis analysis. So here's just some example of the marker polymorphism in the population. So on the left side of the screen, we can see the capillary gel SSR readout, so for three individuals, A, B, C. And again, just demonstrating that there's polymorphism for the SSR markers in this population. And on the right side of the screen, we can see an electrophoresis gel, where we've got some differential banding patterns from the counter gene markers. And again, this is just kind of to show that we did find polymorphism for these markers in this more diverse population. Using that population structure, we found an optimum grouping of two. So I think we've seen this kind of graph a couple times today already, so I won't spend too much time on it. And then I don't have time to talk about all the association analysis results, so I just kind of chose a few markers that I think are interesting and kind of somewhat kind of what we see. So the two SSR markers that I'm going to talk about very briefly are GA1668 and GP478. So these are two QTL markers that were previously associated with drought tolerance, and we see that they're associated with a number of different traits in a number of different trials. So, for example, that GA1668 we saw was associated with a number of traits such as overall quality, chlorophyll content, membrane stability in 2014 at Rutgers, quality in 2014 during the drought trial, as well as quality and membrane stability at the University of Georgia in 2015 for heat and drought, respectively. And similarly, we can kind of see for some of those counter gene markers, so chlorophyll AB binding protein and phenylalanine ammonialase, that again, so here are some of these potential markers that are significantly associated with different traits in different environments, showing that they do have some potential use in, you know, outside of these original populations they were developed in. So the other thing is, so the p-value is from that GLM association analysis, and then the furthest to the right column, that KW p-value, that's the confirmation using the Kruskal-Wallis analysis. So many of these markers that we found significant associations with, you know, they were further confirmed using that Kruskal-Wallis analysis. So in conclusion, 23 markers were significantly associated with these physiological traits related to abiotic stress tolerances. Of that, 20 were SSR markers from the previous QTL studies, and three of them were those five candidate gene markers that I mentioned. So significant markers were found for each environment in both years and across these multiple traits. Some of these associations were a bit more sporadic, so, you know, it'd be maybe one trait, one year, one trial, and that's maybe not the most robust and useful marker. But there are a couple of these markers, like that GA1668 that I showed, that was associated with multiple traits in multiple years across multiple trials. So those may be a little bit more interesting going forward because they may show a bit more robust relationship for overall abiotic stress tolerance. And so that's maybe going forward something that is a bit more valuable. So future work, of course, there's always the ability to further develop and confirm these markers in more diverse materials and even more environments. You know, right now it's just two environments, but obviously kind of the more ways you can test this, the more information you'll get, the more confident you'll be into the ultimate utility of these. And of course, the ultimate goal is to eventually implement these for marker-assisted selection. As a physiologist, it's of course interesting to explore some of the top-performing lines. One, to just better understand the mechanisms, but also for some of these QTL markers, potentially doing some fine mapping and really understanding what is that underlying genetic trait that is causing this difference in tolerance. So with that, I'd like to thank the USGA for funding support, as well as all the people who helped with this project. So obviously, it's a lot of work phenotyping these kinds of populations and then running markers for them. So also, thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions for David?
So we're identifying some markers for drought tolerance, heat tolerance. So what about some potential marker for drought and heat combination, a combination of drought and heat tolerance? Is that something like?
Right, so the question was about markers for the combination of heat and drought, and those obviously would be very interesting to find because, one, these two stresses frequently occur together, and also that may, you know, again, be kind of more robust abiotic stress response. There's a couple of these markers, a very few, that, you know, for the QTL analysis showed up in both QTL for heat and drought, but those are kind of the rarity. And there are a number of these markers when you validate them. You know, originally it was a drought QTL, but we saw, at least in this study, in this population, it was associated with certain traits during heat and drought trials. So that's a good question. And potential, right. And so that's obviously an important thing to look at going forward.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Yes.
I probably missed something in your talk, but when you showed the pictures down in Georgia, they were square plots, and then in New Jersey, it looks like you had a bunch of plants with ryegrass between them.
Yeah, so...
Was everything seeded, or were they single plants
that were first? Both locations were started, so, you know, they're grown in a greenhouse and then plugged into the field. They were not under identical management conditions, so it's a bit hard to make some of the comparisons there.
But it started from seeded populations. Everything was seeded.
Yeah, so it started...
So they had a round plot of ryegrass.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so, you know, these are...
One was coronal and one was population.
Any other questions? I have one
yes.
Very simple one. In 2014 and 15, mm-hmm. we did 2 years. Was it like rain, temperature, everything the same, or the change, any changes in
there? There were some differences between the 2 years. Obviously, there's difference in temperatures, particularly like when we did the drought screening in Georgia in 2015, it was, you know, just when we, you know, shut off the irrigation, it was a little bit warmer, so that might be, you know, not purely drought, so there are some environmental differences between the 2 years, certainly.
How about rain, if there was more rain that then?
There's more rain, but these plots receive irrigation, and then during the drought periods, we have the rainout shelters that will prevent any rainfall from falling, so that helps prevent at least that one confounding variable.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.